Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So what has been going on in Homestead Bettinelli the past week since our last episode? You've had some different things going on this week, right? As the weather has rolled in and winter has descended upon us suddenly.
Yeah, suddenly we've got cold weather. And of course, that means the great clothing changeover, which I did not grow up doing in Texas, really. I mean, we don't really have extremes of seasons and we have cool weather clothes and warm weather clothes. But I don't remember my mom doing like a overhaul of the entire wardrobe and storing away winter clothes and bringing.
But you know what? I grew up here.
Summer clothes.
I don't ever remember doing that either. I mean, we had jeans and we had shorts and we wore them. We wore jeans year round. And in the winter, you just wore your jeans more.
But didn't you have like snow boots and pants and coats that were put away during the summer and then brought out during the winter?
No, they were in the back of your closet.
Oh, did you have bigger closets than we do?
Maybe. I mean, yes. When we had the upstairs. So for most of my childhood, I shared a room with my brother John, and we had this massive closet. It was a second floor with a dormer, so the ceiling slopes down. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you right now, the room I'm talking about is the one that Peter was in.
Okay.
So it's got that sort of slope, and so they kind of cut the slope, and it was just the length of the room, this closet with sliders. It actually was pretty big. And we had like a place for coats on the first floor. I don't remember what we did with our coats and boots in the house. I think there was
Is this just a case of like your mom did stuff and you didn't really notice because it was just like that grown up stuff that parents did?
It was the mom stuff.
Yeah.
It's possible, but still, I just don't remember massive changeovers. I mean, there was a closet, had coats in it. And in the summer, it had coats in it. In the winter, it had coats in it. And it was, I think, the same coats, you know, just a big closet, I guess. I don't know. I hear people talk about, oh, we're doing the clothing changeover. I'm like, I don't even do that now. Like, I have all my clothes hanging up and, oh, look, I need a long sleeve shirt. I'll just take this one today.
The children have lots of clothing and like there's not enough room to have all of their summer and winter clothes out and accessible at once.
The people today have more clothes than I did. That could be it, too.
That's also possible.
Yeah.
And also, there's this sort of the shifting down of hand-me-downs so that, you know, Lucy is now bigger and too big to wear a lot of the last winter's clothes.
She's
so
actually grown.
Right. So I have to get rid of last winter's clothes, like give them away, and then find the clothes that Sophia wore last when she was Lucy's size, which was several years ago. So it involved digging through bins of like Sophie's old clothes that have been stored because there's like three or four sizes between the two of clothes that I've, you know, stored.
Yeah. Yes. Because Sophie was still, even at the same age, was bigger than Lucy.
Was bigger than Lucy is now.
Right.
Right. So anyway, yeah, I lots of clothing. And then we had to go out to the shed and find the bins with the coats and the boots. And we didn't actually find all the coats. We found some of the bins and the boots and the snow pants, but not all the coats.
Well, exacerbated by the fact, which I've mentioned before, is we have no storage. We do not have a basement. We do not have an attic. We do not have a garage. We have a shed that contains bikes, clothing, camping gear, and some yard tools, plus assorted detritus that needs to be thrown away at some point.
Right. and old furniture and broken chairs,
baby stuff, which we do not need anymore. But just getting rid of it is a hassle.
Yeah.
So that exacerbates the situation.
So yeah, I took a couple days off of school. Like I said, some of the kids did some schoolwork. Like Sophie gets up early and does her math and stuff.
Yes.
But by and large, not a whole lot of work happened. At least Monday and Tuesday, a little bit on Wednesday. None on Thursday, which we'll get into in a minute, and a little bit on Friday.
Yeah, I said to Bella at one point, you think you might do some math this week, like come in the office? And she never actually did. I don't think she, no, she did. She did on Thursday. She came in and did some math. So, yeah. The thing is it's helped by the fact that we do school year round. We don't take the summer off. So that allows for us to say, okay, we need to take some time here to do a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So other kids took a long summer vacation. We took a few breaks during the summer, but we kept doing a lot of work. So there's room in our schedule. There's flexibility.
Right.
Yeah.
So I had an interesting scouting week. This is my life is now because I need to revolve around scouting I understand a lot more when my friends Mac and Catherine Barron, who they were involved in scouting, and Mac was a scout leader, and they just at one point when they moved, I think they took a break from scouting, and they were okay with it. The kids were okay with it. I'm like, oh, why? You know, they do. Oh, is they needed a break. Now I understand why. Scouting can absorb as much of your time as you give it, and including the need to help run things. There's always not enough people willing to lead things. And so if you're one of those people who are willing to say, okay, you'll get more and more. So I'm not, in addition to being den leader for the Cub Scout pack, for the Bears, I'm also the treasurer for Troop 13, which is the girls' troop. So Isabella and Sophia, they are in a brand new scout troop for girls, Boy Scouts of America, BSA, Scout Troop for Girls, that whole new thing. So I'm the treasurer. They are half of the troop. There's four girls, and they are half of it. We talked about this last week, about their troop. So this week, we get a call from the district representative who says, would you be willing to take in these girls from another troop who are having a leadership problem? I don't want to get into all the reasons why. It's all hearsay at this point. But apparently they don't have any leaders at the moment, and they're looking for a troop to take them in at least temporarily. They're from another town, so they'd all have to be traveling here. There are 15 of them. We have four girls. And so obviously we have lots of questions and lots of concerns. And we spent the adults spent like an hour at our while the girls were in their meeting on Tuesday, an hour quizzing the district executive. And he didn't have a whole lot of answers because it's a very difficult situation. So there's that. Then there's this other thing, which other people involved in scouting will have heard about, which is national dues are going up. The national organization has charged $30-something a year per scout and adult to be in scouting. Then the local council, which is your local organizing body, also charges dues, which I think is also $30 here. And then the local troop has to also fund its, you know, operations, needs to buy patches and things like that with a smaller amount. So it was like $75 a kid to start with, you know, as of a couple weeks ago, which, you know, is a huge sacrifice for us because we have five kids in scouting. Well, now it turns out national organization has said, we need to basically double our fee. So they're adding $30 on. That's $150 I have to come up with for all of my kids on top of what we've already paid for the year. So very frustrating. Oh, it's because of rising insurance costs. Yeah, the insurance costs are rising is because they have had the same scandal that the Catholic Church has had, which is they've had adults who have abused kids and the organization did not do enough to safeguard kids. And the insurers are now coming after saying refusing to pay out settlements, basically. And then there's accusations of mismanagement by the organization, and why can't you be more efficient, and et cetera, and silly policies. Then the third thing is, as a part of all this, they used to do quarries or criminal background checks every 3 years or something like that. They've decided to implement them every year. And for some reason, which I still don't have a clear handle on, they have a new form that you have to sign that's different from the old form, which they say they're required to phrase it in the way they do because of federal and state laws on such background checks, which requires you to, in writing, give them the authority to conduct consumer background checks in addition to criminal background checks, which is basically like credit check to look up all your consumer activity. Oh, we won't ever use it, they say. It's just language we have to put in there. And then it also says that we have to let them share the information with, quote, their, I won't say quote, but with it's what it says, to the best of my memory, their customers, clients, or future customers and clients and other agents. And I'm like, what customers and clients does the Boy Scouts have?
So basically, it sounds like they cut and paste some language from something else that didn't really adapt it to the specifics.
And their lawyers are asking for as much as they possibly can, because that's what lawyers are supposed to do. Right. And because we're volunteers, we're not employees. We could say no, but then we'd have to leave the organization. And then our kids would suffer because our troop would fold because there'd be no leaders or troop in our pack. You know, so. And I've seen where lawyers have looked at this, lawyers who are also experts, and saying, this is baloney. This is not true. You're saying that you're required to do this by law. You're not. I'm a lawyer in this area. I know. So we're still trying to figure out what we're going to do. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to line out the bits I disagree with and sign it otherwise, which is, when someone offers you a contract, which is essentially what this is, you can line out bits and sign it. And if they don't like it, they don't have to accept it. But we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So then the question is why stay? Why do we continue to be in this organization, which doesn't treat you well? Which sounds a lot like why I'd be Catholic still. Sometimes I see what the value of scouting has done for me since when I was a kid and for our kids.
Right.
But like, what do you think? I mean, I've been doing a lot of the talk. What do you think? Why should we stay in scouting with the kids?
Yeah, I mean, I know that theoretically there are other organizations which one could seek out.
Oh, yes.
But realistically, the picture on the ground where we live, our town, our neighboring towns, is there aren't a whole lot of things for kids to do.
Unless you're in the public schools and you do public school stuff.
But the kind of things that scouts do.
Outdoorsy. But also character forming,
team building, character forming. While the organization itself may have problems, the idea of scouting, you know, going back to Baden-Powell, is something I believe in.
Yes,
I love the way that it. I love the ideals of scouting. I like the, you know, if you look at the scout law and you look at the scout oath, what you're aiming at with the kids. I like that, and. I also like what I've seen so far of our children in Scouts, the kinds of activities that they've done, what it's done for them, how it's helped build their characters.
Build their characters, build their social network with other kids. Right. People talk about socialization with homeschool kids. This is a part of socialization.
Right. And it's not just like just for fun, but there's also educational and formational.
Right.
Aspects to it that I really like. And it sort of takes some of the burden off of us of trying to find ways to do some of those things.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of the only secular organizations out there that still not only sees a value in being religious and having faith, but promotes it, requires it. Right. It is still a requirement at many of the different levels that you do a religious. Well, you know, boys and girls, the older scouts, I don't know what language to use for them anymore. The teenage scouts, they have merit badges, but the cubs, they call loops, they're belt loops. And at many of their levels, they have to do a whole unit on religious faith.
Right. Duty to God.
I mean, gosh, I mean, where else are you going to get that? So like you said, a lot of people said, oh, you should join, I don't know what they're called, American Heritage Girls or
right.
something for boys, like some Knights thing for boys. And it's like, that's all great.
Yes, except- I have friends from all sorts of parts of the countries whose kids are involved in all sorts of alternative activities. But the fact is, there aren't any of those.
Nothing like that around.
And honestly, we are maxed out with you in terms of time commitments with what you're doing with an already well-formed organization, well-organized, just you doing your little bits.
If I had to lead it, to be in charge of it, to start it, to recruit for it, I couldn't. I can't.
That's beyond our capacity.
Right.
We're both very busy, very maxed out. I'm homeschooling. You're doing,
I have this
podcasting.
Job. I'm on the board for Mass Citizens for Life. You know, the scouting. We, you know, it's a lot. We're running a lot. I mean, I know there are people who are busier, I suppose, but for us, this is a lot.
We are at the limit of what we are personally capable of, whether or not other people are able to do more with what they've got.
And I like the people involved. I like the other adults. I've made friendships for myself among the leaders
of
scouting.
Yeah, I agree. The other adults who are involved in scouting are good people. People I enjoy spending time with.
Yep.
People I am glad that our kids are spending time with, who I think are doing a good job being other adults in their lives.
Role models and people who care for them.
Yes.
I have to say that Dan, who is both the Cub Master and also involved, he's like an assistant scout master for the girls troop. Dan might be one of the finest people I know.
Yeah.
He's a mechanic who spends all his free time involved in scouting, like at all levels in the district and the council, in the troop, the pack. And he's personal commitment of time. And I mean, like I said, he might be one of the finest people I know. He's always concerned about how's Ben, how's Anthony, how the girls, how's, you know, he's really concerned.
He cares about them as individuals, as people, not just sort of in the abstract. How are your kids doing?
Right. And if I said, you know, Dan, I need some help, you know, fixing the plumbing. Do you know anything about plumbing? He would be here tomorrow. He would drop everything and come, you know, he's that sort of guy. So And he's not the only one. I mean, I really like the people there, you know, that I'm involved in it with.
And yes.
So that's why we stay, despite the way that they treat some of the organization at the higher levels. It kind of treats you like junk.
But I think a lot of, I mean, this sort of falls into the Catholic principle of subsidiarity, right?
Mm-hmm.
What matters most, the quality of the big parent organization or the quality of our local individual troops?
Right.
So even though the national organization might have problems, our local troops are good. Our PAC and our girls troop are solid. They're good people. And the ideals of scouting are still there.
And this whole thing about like, oh, girls shouldn't be in Boy Scouts. You know, I might have said something else before, but I'll say it again. I would rather my girls be involved in Boy Scouts of America than them be in the Girl Scouts of America. And I'm sorry if you have girls in Girl Scouts of America, but there's a lot of problems. There's a lot more problems with that organization. And the fact is they don't do the sorts of things Boy Scouts does. And they certainly don't have the same sort of values that the Boy Scouts of America does. Not like the ones we talked about. In fact, one of the girls in the girls' troop used to be in Girl Scouts and quit because she didn't like it. For one thing, they only met once a month, and she said they did a lot of cleaning, whatever that means. But they weren't, you know, camping, and they weren't hiking and learning how to tie knots and lashings and building monkey bridges and all that stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, all right. So that's my little rant.
And that's one of those things, like I said, about your local troop. There are probably are people who are very satisfied with Girl Scouts for the same reason that we're satisfied with Boy Scouts. They have solid leadership in their local groups, and it works for them because of the people that are involved. And I could totally see where situations different. We could be involved in a different organization.
In a different organization. Yes.
Right.
Maybe not that one. So what else has been going? That's my little rant about Boy Scouts of America. So the other thing that happened this week was on Thursday, you mentioned, was a disruptive day, was out of the ordinary.
Right. So it's kind of a long story, but but for lots of reasons, we needed to go to Children's Hospital for them to do some tests for Anthony. He's had some problems. Well, not problems. Nope. He's had some concerns that are sort of ruling out possible problems that we don't even know that there necessarily is a problem. It's just making sure that there isn't, you know, precautionary sort of thing.
Right. It's very well said.
Right. So nothing that is concerning. And even if the tests that they did turned up things, it would be like.
It was all very like very exploratory, very like, well, we need to be sure, double sure, just in case. Let's double check and make sure and take all precautions and leave nothing to chance. And we're going to set up this test. Then you're going to go take this test.
Right. But it was a very long day. I got up at 6:30. Anthony got up at 7. We were out of the house by 8. And then we didn't
drive into Boston.
We drove into Boston, which is a drive. And
in rush hour. Yeah.
Right.
From here.
I padded the time because I was afraid of like running into really bad traffic. And as it was, we got there about 40 minutes before we needed to. So we sat around and read. Anthony brought his gigantic tome of a book. I think it's volume 6 of Harry Potter. Which greatly impressed the nurses with this little 8-year-old boy tugging around this like gigantic tome. We had a nice day. Like he had 2 rounds of tests. And after the first one, we went down to the cafeteria and it was a little bit too early for lunch, but Starbucks was open. So we got some pastries and he got a chocolate milk and I got a coffee drink. And we ate those and we talked and he looked at his book for a while and I looked at my book. And then I noticed that people were starting to come in like the beginnings of the lunch rush and people had like pizza.
This was after the first test, right?
Right. After the first test.
Okay.
And Anthony said, I'm still hungry. And I said, would you like a slice of pizza?
He's always still hungry.
So we went and got him some pizza. So he had a cinnamon bun and a chocolate milk and then he had a pizza and an apple juice.
My favorite pizza, Pizzeria Regina.
Yeah, I have to say, Children's Hospital has a really nice food court.
Yeah, they have a really nice everything.
our previous experience there, I didn't get
with to, Lucy. Yeah,
when Lucy was inpatient, I didn't get to explore the food court because I was with a toddler who couldn't be left alone for long periods of time. She freaked out when I walked out of the room and left her with a nurse when I did need to like go to the bathroom or get something to eat. But yeah, this was nice. I all the people we interacted with were very nice and helpful. And but it was a long day.
Yeah. Yeah. And then yeah, cuz you got home.
We got home about almost 4:35.
Yeah. So and I'd been, you know, working all day. But we ended up getting barbecue from Tennessee's.
Yes.
Tennessee's barbecue here in Massachusetts,
is not as good as Texas barbecue, but it's good.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta say, I mean,
they have
barbecue around here. They have really good barbecue.
Yeah, they have pretty good brisket. I mean, it's not.
It's no Ruby's.
Right.
Ruby's in Austin.
Yeah,
which doesn't exist anymore.
Sadly. Cry.
No, it's no Franklin barbecue. I've never had Franklin barbecue.
I've never had Franklin barbecue either. Actually.
People would probably be aghast at. You lived in Austin, didn't have Franklin barbecue, but it didn't exist when you lived there.
Yeah, my family tends to County Line if we're going out for barbecue.
Which was good.
Which is really good. Our local barbecue joint where, like, if on a weeknight, my mom would be picking up barbecue.
What's that called again? Not Ruby's, but it's like it's another R.
No. It was actually when I was growing up.
Oh, when you were growing up.
It was Bill Miller.
Oh, right.
Which was owned by, I think, people who are parishioners at our parish.
Okay.
But Bill Miller was like good, solid, like neighborhood barbecue.
Just like the name says, Bill Miller.
Right. And they had like the sign had like a cow and a pig and a chicken on it.
Yes.
It's just your
local neighborhood joint.
Right. And you know, you got the white bread, like the loaf of white bread along with your brisket.
Weirdest thing ever.
And you could get a bucket of sweet tea. Not that I like sweet tea, mind you. I'm of the like add sugar to your own tea school of thought, which I know is heretical to a lot of people in the South, but I'm from Texas, so we were right on that line between sweet tea and not
being
sweet
Southern
tea.
And not being Southern.
Right. It's its own thing.
Being Texan and being Southern are two different things almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we did get Tennessee's. I got wings from there this time. And I got to say, the wings were good. They weren't like very saucy, but they were spicy and smoked. And that's really good. I got to try making that next summer.
I didn't even try the wings. Honestly, after I had way too much sugar, because then after his test, Anthony's test, we ended up going to Panera and getting more pastries for the ride home. He got a gingerbread man and I got a carrot cake. Carrot cake is my weakness.
And a Coke you got.
And I got a Coke. I did not drink most of the Coke. I was afraid of not having caffeine and falling asleep on the highway.
Yeah, I know how that is.
Right. But we listened to a book on tape, Anthony and I did. And that was nice. That eats up the time really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know what else does that? Podcast.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. We're doing a podcast.
Right. But yeah, we did an audiobook and we had a good day. I mean, it was nice to spend time with Anthony. It's always nice when you get your kids one-on-one and have a little bit of time to just bond.
I find him to be very quiet in the car.
He is very quiet.
It's so funny. He could be like at home. He is Mr. Loud at everything. But you get him outside the doors, like outside of our yard, essentially.
Right.
And he's like, quiet boy.
Especially isolated from other kids.
Even with the scouts, he's the quiet one in our den. Like,
right. It's very funny. And I tell like the medical professionals are like, oh, he's so very quiet. He's so very calm. And I'm like, yeah, he's the kid who's like, I have to say, you know, stop jumping on the furniture.
Yeah.
But he's got a lot of energy.
Yeah, he does.
But he's very, he also loves to read.
Yeah.
So he sort of oscillates between laying in his bed with a book reading or like wandering around the house with a book and then like using all the pent up energy from like not moving for a while.
So let's talk about we had a day of cooking today.
We did.
You did not get a day of rest like you had hoped.
No. Well,
we got home from Mass and I made pancakes and bacon.
Right.
And then you needed to make muffins, right?
Yeah. I try to keep muffins in the freezer
for Lucy,
especially, but also other kids sometimes when they can't find their favorite breakfast foods, will dip into the muffin stash. And we had depleted our muffin stash this week. There was nothing left for Lucy to munch on. And even though she had been kind of tired of the last batch of muffins and was sort of only eating them under protest, suddenly when the last one was gone, the next day she was like in tears because there was no muffin for her to eat. Yeah, but you know, what are you going to do? So I made muffins and it was a drama because my normal like standby has become muffins made with almond flour. And I was out of almond flour. And so I had to go find a different recipe for the actual ingredients I had on hand. And cooking for allergies is tough because Lucy can't have wheat. And she can't have corn.
Wheat, corn, dairy.
But the dairy and eggs is actually sort of the opposite problem in that she's supposed to have dairy and eggs that are baked. Because she can eat them baked and eating them regularly actually helps to reduce her allergies to them.
Right.
Reduces the
sensitivity.
Right. Hopefully to the point where someday she'll be able to actually just like drink a cup of milk and like
have some eggs for breakfast. Yeah.
So she's supposed to eat them baked regularly, which is another reason why I try to keep the muffins stocked. But what I find is that oftentimes when you go to the like wheat free recipes, you're also like the Venn diagram of people who are eating without wheat often overlaps with people who are avoiding sugar, avoiding carbs, avoiding other things. And so a lot of the recipes will be like sweetened with applesauce or with maple syrup or with honey or with agave nectar. All of these ingredients that I don't really want to use in my muffins. I would just like a regular muffin with like gluten-free flour substituted, but the ratios don't always work for a recipe that's not written for.
Right. So very often these are written for people who are like making lifestyle choices.
Right. Like a lot of the recipes for the ingredients I'm looking up end up being like paleo recipes you know, paleo almond flour is very big in the paleo community.
Which is probably why it's been so hard to find it these days.
Right. But then they're also eschewing, you know, sugar. So they're, you know, you, the ones who are using like applesauce or bananas or something, but, or
a cup of maple syrup.
Right. Like one of the recipes I was looking at today had half a cup of maple syrup, and maple syrup is not really that cheap.
And especially real maple syrup.
Maple syrup, which is what the recipe was calling for. And I'm thinking, well, maybe if you're a single person and you're not feeding like five kids and you're not
right,
you know, but I'm not wanting to put maple syrup into my muffins. It's just not cost effective. I just want white sugar or maybe brown sugar.
Right. So having to figure out how to adapt these things. I saw Megan helped you with that, though.
Right. My friend, my former roommate, who is a physics teacher, helped me with the math. She found a cookbook that used applesauce to substitute for sugar. And so she worked the math backwards to substitute sugar for the applesauce.
Because did you say that it's not just substituting for the sugar, it's substituting for the liquid, too?
Right. This is the problem with a lot of these substitutions is that they're...
Applesauce, honey, and syrup add not only sugar, but they add liquid.
Right. And so if you're substituting sugar, you have to add the liquid back in, and you have to add it in the right proportion. Otherwise, you end up with a muffin that's too dry or too wet. And I've had both problems. I've cooked muffins that are too dry and too wet. And then, of course, you also run into the problems of like people who are cooking low-fat muffins. And I'm not especially interested in low-fat. I would rather have high-fat muffins. Which
is good for the kids.
Which is better, you know, kids need fats. And
especially our kids who are not overweight.
Right. And also, higher fat content means that they don't go stale as fast. Breads and baked goods that have low fat are really, really good the first day, and then they get stale really quick because that fat is what really holds on to the moist feeling.
Right. So, yeah.
So I had an adventure. I ranted a little bit to my Facebook friends, and I did a lot of research and a lot of math. And
exactly how you like to spend your Sunday afternoon.
It was not restful, especially, but it was worth it, I suppose, to see Lucy's face when I handed her a chocolate muffin and she bit into it and she said, "Oh, this is really good."
Finally.
So that was nice.
So. So we went from the muffin problem to the what's for dinner problem tonight.
Oh, yes, because I did not have a plan.
Yes. But we ended up with, so we knew we had both flank steak and chicken breasts in the freezer.
Yes.
And so we were trying to figure out what to do with that. And I'd still like to go back and try that steak with adobo sauce, the flank steak with adobo sauce.
Uh-huh.
But that takes longer. You have to have the right kind of dry chilies. So... we went with chicken, and I was remembering that you have a family sweet and sour pork recipe, and we hadn't made that in a while. I thought maybe we could do that with sweet and sour chicken. But of course, again, same issue. A lot of these recipes, they want you to dredge in cornstarch and flour, things we can't do with Lucy.
Right.
And you, to top it off, your sister is visiting, who has her own set of allergies.
Right, so I had to make a tomato-free, gluten-free, soy-free sauce, sweet and sour sauce for my sister, which ended up being kind of experimental, but I think it worked fairly well. She was satisfied. I tasted it. It was okay.
We have a soy substitute you picked up for her, right?
Right. It's a coconut aminos. I don't really know much about that.
Yeah, she knew about it, of course.
Right. But I used some tamarind chutney and some Worcestershire sauce, vinegar, the coconut aminos, some more salt, some sugar, some pineapple juice. I sort of mixed it around. I taste tested until it tasted okay, and it came out okay.
And for us, you just use soy, right?
Yeah. For our sweet and sour sauce is more traditional sweet and sour sauce, which uses a ketchup base.
Mm-hmm.
And then vinegar, sugar, pineapple juice, Worcestershire sauce, soy sauce. And for a thickener, I use tapioca starch.
Right.
Which worked really well. It had a nice consistency, a nice instead thick of sauce starch. Instead
yeah.
of cornstarch. Tapioca is really good substitute for cornstarch. That and arrowroot are my favorites for thickeners.
Right, right. Yeah, although there's sometimes when rice flour, brown rice flour, is a good coating for things.
Right. If I'm going to like recipes that call for you to dredge like fish or meat in flour, brown rice flour works really nice. It makes a nice crispy coating, like and it, fried it, fish, or
and has that brown flavor, you know? What, chicken?
Schnitzel.
Schnitzel, yes. Schnitzel. Tonight's one though with the chicken. So we dredged the chicken in the tapioca flour mixture.
Yeah, I mixed half and half tapioca starch and cassava flour, which is, they're both from the cassava root, but cassava is ground, so it has more of the fibers, and tapioca is soaked, so it just has the starch without the fiber.
Oh, interesting. So in that, and then in egg this time, yes, which was an experiment this for was, Lucy.
Right. When we took her to the allergist earlier this year, and she did not test positive in the skin scratch test for eggs and milk, which suggests to me that the muffins have been working and she's
growing out of the allergy.
Right. She's growing out of the allergy. But the allergist, which was a new allergist to us, to my dismay, did not want to do the food challenge. And at the time, I was very busy and we were short on cash. So paying for a lot of extra office visits to do a food challenge was already kind of straining the budget. So I just sort of let it slide. And she's been hesitant to do an at-home food challenge because
Lucy has.
We ran into a problem where
we went out to Five Guys Burgers and Fries and got her a burger and she reacted.
Right. I think that probably it had some peanut in it.
Yeah, Five Guys is full of peanut.
Right. Which is an allergy that, although she didn't react super strongly to it in the skin scratch test, I know she's still allergic to peanuts.
Right.
And nuts are still an issue for her.
So that put her off. But so we tried with the dredge, with the egg, and she didn't react at all. She has not had a negative reaction. We would normally have seen it by now, some sort of redness around the mouth or something like that. Yeah. So,
and I mean, lest you think that we're horrible parents for testing on her, the allergist did say we could experiment with testing them at home. He was not concerned. I was more concerned than the allergist was. And she's never had an anaphylactic reaction where, like, she needed an EpiPen. She's never.
It's always been a sensitivity, not a deep allergy in the life-threatening sense.
Right. She's never been hospitalized for a food allergy or needed to go.
Right. Yeah, no EpiPen. Nothing like that.
Though we have an EpiPen.
We do
just
have
in case.
It. Yes. Hopefully we never use it. So, so that. I think it worked out. A lot of the kids, they didn't really like the sweet and sour flavor.
Which, you know,
it was so strong, sweet and sour.
When I was a child, I did not like sweet and sour sauce. My mom would make sweet and sour pork. And what I really liked was the fried pork bits. She would leave some of them with no sauce on them. Really liked the fried.
They are pretty darn crunchy, yummy. Just by themselves. And the smell of them cooking reminded me a lot of like fried clams or fried seafood. I bet this would be a great method for fried. I'd like to try that.
They were really tasty. I tried one with before I put the sauce on it, and it was really good both with and without the sauce.
Yeah. So great. So that's one thing we've been cooking this week. So let's talk about what we've been reading and watching. I'll jump off with what I've been watching. I watched the new Apple TV Plus series. So last time I mentioned the C that they did, which was a fail. I did. There was you'll have heard what I said about it. You can go back and listen to that if you didn't. So I watched this other one that a lot of people have been talking about called For All Mankind. The premise starts with, what if the Soviets landed on the moon a month before Apollo 11?
Okay.
So because the Soviets never managed to do it, they had too many problems. But what if they managed to avoid those problems and land?
They overcame the technical problems that they had. Okay.
What political, technological, social, cultural implications would that have for us after that? How would that affect world affairs?
Would it really have been that much different than like them getting Sputnik in orbit?
Well, but that's the point. When Sputnik happened, it was a huge deal. And if we were to lose, we went all in on the moonshot. Which is why we call it a moonshot, like a long shot. We call it a moonshot. We went all in on that. And for us to have been beat, like, because it comes out of the blue, no one knew that they were landing until they alerted the world that we're about to broadcast from the moon. So no one had known that. And so for that to come out of nowhere and to get beat again, it would say when they got beat after having been the first into space with Sputnik and then the first man in space.
Mm-hmm.
Then we beat them to the moon. That showed American technology is better, American power. You know, it actually had some implications in the world. When we didn't, that in the show,
right?
That's it says Soviet Marxism Leninism is triumphant. It's a viable way of life. It's strong. It's growing, and it has implications. It had political implications. What would Nixon have done? If we didn't, would we have shut down the space program? If we couldn't get a man up there, would they have ended it after, like, we were about to launch Apollo 11, so that probably would have gone anyway. Would we have canceled the rest of the space program? You know, as they say, that we don't give out silver medals in the United States, you know, that sort of thing. First loser, that whole mindset. So, and then what cultural issues? And they have this, it's an ongoing series. I've only seen the first episode. Which was really good, but there's this, for some reason, there's this thread through it of this girl and her family who are from Mexico, who are making their way across the Rio Grande as the moon landing is happening.
Interesting.
And I'm not sure why, like we don't know why we're following this family. So it's very interesting. Kind of curious to see where it goes and how far, like how much time are they going to cover? Are they going to jump ahead by a decade? You know, I mean, what I don't know. The people behind it are the executive producer is a guy named Ronald D. Moore. He did the Battlestar Galactica reboot, but he got his start in Star Trek. And I notice a lot of the names of the production people are people from Star Trek.
Interesting.
So I'm curious. I have to say this one has been good so far. I'm liking it. So the other thing is I'm halfway through a movie, a documentary movie on Netflix called Spitfire. And it's the story of the Supermarine Spitfire, the British warplane that basically saved Western civilization from the Nazis, that won the Battle of Britain because it was such an amazing plane. So where did this plane come from? Who invented it? Why was it so great? Who were the men who flew the plane and the women on the ground and the women's auxiliary who help them, usually through the as spotters and plotters and, you know, that sort of stuff. Just amazing. It's a really well done documentary, and the narration is by this guy. Oh, what is his name? The actor, he played the head Lannister on Game of Thrones. He's been in a couple other things. Oh, it's right on the tip of my tongue. Oh. He's a really good actor, though.
I can't help you.
Yes. He's a really good actor. He's been in a couple other things that I've watched recently. Very, very awesome British accent. So really good. So that's been really good. I'm looking forward to watching the rest of that movie on Netflix, Spitfire. You know, if you like, the cinematography is great, by the way. The aerial shots of it are really amazing.
Would this be appropriate for kids to watch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's nothing...
Sounds like something our kids might enjoy, especially Isabella. She was really into airplanes.
Oh, they would love it. The World War II was airplanes, especially. Yes. So what have you got you wanted to talk about?
Not much reading. I mean, not much viewing.
Yep. Still working your way through Bones.
Yes. Yes. Still slowly. I'm in season 11 out of 12 seasons, so I'm getting there. I've kind of finished a lot of the books I've been reading. I'm dipping into books here or there. Nothing's really grabbing me. The book I took to the hospital with me on Thursday, I spent some time with, is a book of poetry. And we haven't really talked about a lot of poetry on our podcast yet, so I thought I'd mention it. It's called Psalter, A Sequence of Catholic Sonnets, and it's by William Baer. And it's basically kind of like it said, it goes through and it's got sonnets inspired by the Old Testament. So section one is the Pentateuch, then the Law, then the Writings, and then sonnets inspired by the New Testament, the Gospels, and then Acts, Epistles, and Revelations. So it's maybe 60 or so sonnets. And some of them are better than others. I feel like a few of them feel a little bit forced, or I don't know, I'm not quite satisfied with them. But some of them are really have been hard hitting and like really made me think to see things in a new way. So I like the collection really well.
Cool. Yes, poetry is one of those things that we don't quite share. I admire poetry and I like some of the poetry offer, and but I don't. I'm coming to a greater appreciation of poetry, but poetry was not something that I brought to the marriage.
Right.
But I'm glad that you share it with me.
Yeah, I obviously poetry is one of my passions. I was an English major, and a lot of my studies were very focused on poetry. So I spent a lot of time with it in my schooling. And even before, though, I mean, I ended up as an English major because I like poetry and novels. But my major projects in school were poetry.
Cool. So I wanted to finish up tonight by talking about today's gospel, this Sunday's gospel. It's the, as the computer tells us, it was the 32nd Sunday in Ordinary Time. And it's Luke 20, verses 27-38.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the story, just to remind people, of the Sadducees, who don't believe in the resurrection, who corner Jesus and put a question to him designed to trick him. You know, the here you go. This will prove that there couldn't possibly be a resurrection. And they do the whole, all right, Moses says that if someone's brother dies, leaving a wife but no child, He has to marry the wife and raise up descendants for his brother. So my brother dies. Presumably I'm single. I would think that you're not supposed to abandon your wife to marry your brother's wife, right?
Well, I mean, there was still some polygamy at the time of Moses, right? But
was it? Yeah, I mean,
but by the time of Jesus, that had pretty much it was not really a part of Jewish culture. I mean, I'm not really versed in Hebrew history.
Yeah,
so.
I'm pretty sure it's not. We could just assume that he's not supposed to leave his wife and take up with his brother's wife. Okay, and then they pose the whole seven brothers thing. Well, there were seven brothers, and the first one married her, but died childless, and then the second, and the third, and all seven. Well, when the resurrection comes, whose wife will she be? You know, and you know, Jesus, the whole, you know, there will be neither marrying or marriage, remarrying in heaven. But they will neither marry nor are given in marriage. They can no longer die, for they are like angels and they are the children of God, because they are the ones who will rise, that the dead will rise. Even Moses made known in the passage about the bush, and talks about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and God is not the God of the dead. And, so my first funny reaction is, well, of course she wouldn't be anybody's wife in the resurrection, because she'd be in hell, because she's obviously killing off all of her husbands.
Uh-huh.
That's my funny reaction.
Right.
But the whole thing about, like, there's neither marriage or remarriage in heaven, which I've heard many times before. I've heard this gospel a lot of times. And one of the things that gets me is, you know, I understand what's being said here. We're in heaven, our union with God and with one another is beyond even what marriage can do for us here. Like, as great as marriage can be, as wonderful and all-consuming of love that can be, in heaven, the normal state of things of relationship in heaven is even beyond that. Okay,
right.
So I get that, but there's still a part of me that says, but I want our relationship to be special. Like, I don't want to get to heaven and just like, well, see you later. It was nice spending, you know, a few decades with you and having some kids. And, but now you're the same as everybody else. And so I'll catch you around. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, go ahead. I'll let you react to that.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Cause like, I suppose, it's too, I have too prosaic an idea of what heaven is. Heaven is not like the good place, a neighborhood that we all move to,
right,
where, you know, you have, you can go to the whatever restaurant you want and eat lobster every day. And it's not like, it's not Earth 2.0, the better version.
Right. I mean, to me, I think that's actually one of the things that's interesting about this reading, because it challenges me to think, okay, you sort of, you've imagined this idea of heaven. That's not foreign enough. It's going to be so much better than you can even imagine, that like the best thing you can imagine doesn't even come close to touching what heaven is really going to be like. So I guess to me, it dangles a promise. Like, you can't imagine this, so it's a challenge. Like, imagine more, imagine harder, imagine deeper,
right.
like push yourself to imagine something that's so good that you won't even miss the best things that you have now, because it's so much better.
Right. I know. I have a hard time dealing with eternal matters because my brain gets woozy. It blows my mind. I get all jittery and like I'm standing on a precipice. You know what I mean? It really, like, infinity makes me feel like I'm standing on the edge of a high place.
I see.
And I get all jittery about it. I have like a infinophobia.
Infinophobia. That's an interesting term.
It's my new pathology.
I have to say that one of my favorite saints.
And we have a show title.
Yeah. One of my favorite saints is Elizabeth Ann Seton, whose shrine we visited this summer.
Yeah.
And I read a really interesting book about her a couple years ago. And it was something about the spiritual life of Elizabeth Ann Seton. That's not the title. I can't remember the title. But it was really focusing not as a biography, but more of a spiritual biography. So it didn't sort of go through her life in chronological order, but it talked about her interior life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the hallmarks of her particular spirituality was that from a very early age, she lost her mother when she was very young. And knowing that her mother was in heaven and sort of yearning for that, her mother, for some people that might like turn them against God or whatever, but for her, it made heaven into this sort of beacon for which she spent her life yearning for heaven. She had this very deep hunger for eternity. And that's something that she passed on to her children and something that she wrote about in her letters to other people. And there's something about the way this book presented that just really was very attractive to me. That she lived her entire life with this yearning for heaven. It was a place that she longed to be. And I guess that made a really big impact on me. The idea that the focus of one's spiritual life could be seeking to satisfy that hunger.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. It's not like I don't want to go to heaven.
Well,
I don't imagine that that I will be intensely happy there if God willing I make it. But it's up to you, by the way. It's your job to get me there.
Right. Well, vice versa.
Yeah, I get the easy job. but obviously I want to go and I can imagine that it will be amazing, but the whole, I just don't like thinking about what it will be like because it's so foreign. It's so alien to me. And I mean, I know there's some people who, they love to think about it. They love to talk about it. I just can't. I know Peter Kreeft has written a book about what will heaven be like. And there's a couple other saints who have written about what heaven is like. And that sort of thing. And so I don't have I know that that there's stuff out there to explain it. I don't have a problem with that. And I have intellectual understanding and I've studied theology and all that sort of stuff. It's the personal aspect. But so as I listen to this, I'm just listening to, you know, this idea of, you know, what really struck me this time listening to was those who make it to heaven will neither marry nor are given in marriage. And that really struck me about our relationship and that, you know, till death do us part, but I don't want death to part us.
Although
I know we did with when a spouse dies, you can remarry. So what, you know, who you married to in heaven.
But I don't think it's a parting. It's just that I think we are limited finitely by time so that we can only love a handful of people with that sort of intensity. But in eternity,
there's no limit on
that. There's no limit on love. Like, we are limited because you can only spend so much time with so many people. But in eternity, you can spend as much time, like, there's no time limit. So you can know everybody, like, even better than you know me or I know you. Like,
right.
It's not a lessening.
Without the limitations of sinfulness.
Right. Without any limitations at all. I mean, right. To me, that's kind of exciting. It sounds like a great adventure.
Yeah.
But I guess my idea of heaven is very much informed by C.S. Lewis's The Last Battle.
Yeah.
Further up, further in.
Yeah.
To me, my fundamental understanding of heaven is like, it's a really cool place where you get to like go on great adventures, and the story never has to stop. You never get to the last page and close the book with the end. Like, there's no the end.
Okay, I'm kind of standing on the precipice again.
Oops.
Okay. So hopefully that is an interesting discussion for listeners, and maybe if they have a perspective, they could let us know and write in and tell us, or send us even a voice recording. I'd love to get a voice recording from listeners. Play that. But you know, what do you think? Is this something that you think about? Do you have infinophobia, or are you just excited about heaven, or is this something you just don't even think about at all? You're too busy living life today. You know, I'd love to hear from you and what you have to say about it. So, I think that's about it.
All right.
Before we head out, we want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Megan F., different Megan from the one, our friend, who's a physicist. Megan F., Patrick W., Paul B., Stephen B., and Lawrence S. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You could join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. Again, what do you think of our discussion of any of the things we talked about, but including the gospel today? Let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets, that's BETTS, or the SQPN Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send us an email to bets@sqpn.com. You'll find any relevant links to our discussion, including links to the book that Melanie mentioned, in our show notes at sqpn.com/bets. Remember, if you can, please to like Raising the Bets when you see it on the StarQuest Facebook page, or retweet it on Twitter where we're at SQPN, and leave us comments. All of your interaction with our social media entries actually helps with the silly algorithm engines so that people actually want to see our content can see more of it. So we would really appreciate that if you would interact with that. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.